WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Monday. That's right. It is October 26th, 2015, and you are now locked into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and we've got a great show to kick off your week. In just a sec, I'll be chatting with Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal. Brian covers high school sports. Of course, last night on Fox Sports Detroit, the announcement of which teams were in and which teams were out when it comes to the high school football playoffs were announced and revealed. And get this, folks, there are more than a handful of schools that made it from right here in mid-Michigan. Brian will give us a rundown of which teams made it, which teams made it that he was surprised that made it. Also, some teams there was a few out there that didn't quite make the cut, and Brian will also talk about that as well. So you don't want to miss that chat. We will also remember Flip Saunders, who sadly passed away this weekend due to complications from cancer. We'll talk MSU football as they move up one spot in the Associated Press poll. And, yeah, we got to do it, folks. We got to talk about the Lions as they lose to the Vikings yesterday. This is just a bad season. Just a bad season. And we'll close out our show with weekend winners. If you want to be a part of today's Current Sports, you know that number. Just call in and dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Of course, as customary here, like we do each and every weekday, we take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. But hey, you know what's coming next. Let's hit you with our Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, October 26th. There are 21 high school football teams from Mitten, Michigan that will be starting the journey, toward Ford Field this weekend. The pairings for the high school football playoffs were revealed Sunday night on Fox Sports Detroit. Some of the highlights include Division VI top-ranked Ithaca, also trying to get back to Ford Field and begins its journey against Vassar. Division IV, number 7-ranked Lakewood, is in the playoffs for the first time since 2002, while other teams in the postseason, after missing out last year, include Corunna, Hazlitt, Laingsburg, and Alma. We'll have more on the state football playoffs being announced. We'll have more on that subject with Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal in just a sec. You don't want to miss that. After a win against Indiana on Saturday night, the Michigan State football team moved up one spot in the Associated Press poll with an undefeated record of 8-0. The top four teams in the poll are right now Ohio State, Baylor, Clemson, and LSU. The Michigan State women's golf team, they closed the fall season in record-breaking fashion on Sunday. The Spartans shot a 13 under par, 275 in the final round of the Landfall Tradition, the lowest single round in program history by, get this, just 3 shots. Unbelievable stuff. MSU sophomore Sarah Burnham, she claimed medalist honors after equaling her school record 6 under par 66. Burnham won the tournament by 1 stroke after finishing with a 54-hole total of 5 under 211, tying for the 4th lowest score in Michigan State history. As a team, the Spartans took 8th place in the tourney. That is beyond impressive. The Michigan State women's soccer team, they took a 3-1 win over Indiana on Sunday. The final home game of the season served as senior day, where the program honored 10 student athletes for their commitment to Spartan soccer throughout their collegiate career. MSU is currently 8-5-4 on the year and will head to Ohio State on Wednesday for their final regular season game of 2015. Teddy Bridgewater, he threw for a season-high 316 yards and 2 TDs, and the Minnesota Vikings topped the Detroit Lions 28-19 on Sunday. Adrian Peterson rushed for 98 yards as the Vikes, who are now 4-2, won an NFC North game on the road for the first time in 3 years. The Detroit Lions are now 1-6. They had an 11-point lead after Matthew Stafford threw TDs on their first 2 drives, but then they blew it. It all went out the window because they could not protect Matthew Stafford. He was sacked 7 times. Are you kidding me, son? We'll get back to that game in just a sec. Kirk Cousins, former MSU QB, throws a game-winning touchdown to Jordan Reed with 24 seconds left in the game. The Washington Redskins trailed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24 points in the second quarter. This was the largest comeback in team history.
With 28 seconds to go, Cousins goes back to Reed for a 6-yard touchdown and lead, 31-30. 12 seconds left in the game. Jameis Winston, he hits Charles Sims down the middle. Sims fumbles the ball. Chris Baker recovers for Washington. The Redskins, they hang on to win 31-30, largest comeback in team history.
You like that? You like that?
Do you like that? Oh, if you have not seen Kirk Cousins' celebration after that game, you are missing out on life, folks. It was pretty riveting. It got me pumped. All right, after a concussion limited the veteran only to Friday night's exhibition finale, Stan Van Gundy said that Steve Blake is likely the backup point guard when the Pistons open the regular season at Atlanta tomorrow night. NBA is in the air, folks. Oh, I'm excited. All right, Blake will be the first choice when starter Reggie Jackson needs a break despite second-year point guard Spencer Dinwiddie putting up solid performances during the later part of the exhibition year. Blake, who is 35 years old, was acquired in the offseason from the Brooklyn Nets. And last but not least, sad news from the world of the NBA. Flip Saunders, Minnesota Timberwolves and former Detroit Pistons head coach, passed away Sunday from cancer at the age of 60. He announced in August that he had been diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma. And this past Friday, the public was informed that he would miss the entire 2015-16 year. Just 2 days later, Flip passed away, and the NBA mourns his death. Rest in peace, Flip Saunders. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on any of those or anything that happens to be on that sports noggin of yours, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Time to start the show.
Philip Flip Saunders was a coaching lifer. For more than 35 years, he worked the sidelines in colleges, minor leagues, and the NBA, and had success in every arena. He had more than 1,000 coaching wins, racking them up at places like Golden Valley Lutheran College and with CBA teams like the Rapid City Thrillers and the La Crosse Catbirds, which he led to 2 CBA championships. And of course, the Minnesota Timberwolves, which he once led to 8 straight playoff appearances, and the Detroit Pistons, who reached the conference finals 3 straight years when he was on the sidelines. The Cleveland native was named Player of the Year in Ohio as a senior in high school, when he averaged 32 points a game. In college, he played on juggernaut teams at the University of Minnesota, where he played alongside future NBA players Michael Thompson, Ray Williams, and Kevin McHale. Always a gifted offensive mind, Saunders became a standout offensive coach who specialized in coaching point guards. But perhaps the player he had the greatest impact on was a big man, a wiry kid who came straight from high school in 1995 named Kevin Garnett. Under Saunders' tutelage, Garnett developed into one of the best players in the NBA and eventually an MVP. 7 times Saunders' NBA teams won 50 or more games, including a Pistons franchise record 64 in the 2005-06 season. 2 times he coached the All-Star game and led Team USA to the gold medal in the Goodwill Games in 2001. He also spent time as an analyst here at ESPN.
So I think it's a trick question because LeBron's not in his prime yet. He's still improving.
Hasn't even got there yet.
He's still improving.
Where he won over co-workers with his knowledge and kindness. His latest project was perhaps his most grand. He returned to the Wolves in 2013 after 8 years away to be team president and part owner. In 2014, he took over again as coach. He was in the process of a major rebuilding effort following the trade of Kevin Love. It included the acquisition of Rookie of the Year Andrew Wiggins, engineering the return of Garnett to mentor young players, the construction of a new downtown practice facility, and the renovation of the Target Center. Flip was looking forward to seeing how Wiggins and his other prized number one pick, Karl-Anthony Towns, would play together this season. But he was diagnosed with lymphoma in the spring, and complications arose during treatment that forced him to step away from the jobs as his health deteriorated over the summer. This group of young Wolves will now carry his legacy. He leaves a wife and four children, including son Ryan, who is a Wolves assistant coach.
Yeah, folks, that's how we start today's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Al Martin. Sad news coming from the sporting world yesterday concerning one of the NBA's greatest coaches, in my opinion. Flip Saunders, now dead at the age of 60. I didn't know, actually, how close Tom Izzo, who is the head men's basketball coach right here at Michigan State, I didn't know how close he was to Flip. Just to read an excerpt from his comments, which were released shortly after news was released that Flip passed away. Tom Izzo had to say this, quote, "My heart is heavy for Flip's wife, Debbie, son, Ryan, who will carry the basketball coaching torch, and daughters, Mindy, Rachel, and Kimberly. I lost a beloved friend today, but I can only imagine the heartache his wonderful family is feeling. I've read and heard some of the tributes to Flip, and I take solace in seeing the outpouring of love for him. Flip had many great qualities and an outstanding coaching resume, but what made him special was the way he treated people. It didn't matter if you were one of his players, an opposing player or coach, front office personnel, or first-year intern, loyal fan or heckler, media or critic, or simply someone he passed on the street. He treated everyone with utmost respect. I played against Flip in college and later convinced him to join our staff at Tulsa, although I left 2 days later. I had the pleasure of coaching for him in the 2001 Goodwill Games and spent a lot of time with him while he was coaching the Detroit Pistons and in between jobs. It's been a 30-plus year friendship, but Flip never changed. From junior college coach to college assistant to the CBA and eventually the NBA. It didn't matter what level of success he achieved, Flip always treated people the same. Basketball, and more importantly, humanity, lost a great man today. But Flip's positive impact on everyone's life that he touched will leave a lasting legacy, one which can inspire and drive us all." Flip Saunders, what a man he was, folks. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I'll just share, you know, my brief thoughts on the news of Flip passing. It was really shocking to me because, of course, with all of us living in the social media world that we live in, I mean, if we see anything that is shocking news, we question it a bit because there are a lot of people that embark on what I call rumor mill. A lot of people put things out there on social media specifically that just aren't true. So when I saw it come across my Facebook feed yesterday, I questioned it. I said, no, this can't be true. I don't even remember Flip even being diagnosed with cancer. So I went on ESPN.com and lo and behold, it was the top headline on their website. Had no idea that Flip was diagnosed with cancer. And looking at a report last night locally, it was said that Tom Izzo was actually, he hopped on a plane when he found out the news of Flip's condition. He hopped on the plane to try and visit Flip, but sadly he didn't get there in time because Flip had already passed. Shocking stuff, folks. And of course, for me, I'm a big Detroit Pistons fan. Many of you out there who tune in regularly to the show know that. And, of course, I vividly remember not only Flip's tenure as the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, in which he had, you know, arguably his best years as a head coach, but I remember when he came to Detroit as the Detroit Pistons head coach. Of course, he replaced Larry Brown as the coach of the Detroit Pistons on July 21st, 2005, shortly after, I believe, what, that's like the next season, after the Detroit Pistons had won the NBA championship. Under Saunders, the team set a new franchise record for wins during the regular season, finishing with a, if you remember, a 64-18 record. Impressive stuff. He coached the Eastern Conference All-Stars in the 2006 NBA All-Star game out in Houston, Texas. Upon entering his third year as the Pistons coach, Saunders became the longest tenured Pistons coach since Chuck Daly's 9-year tenure, which lasted from 1983 to 1992. And as you just heard in our montage there to begin our show, that really nice eulogy from, of course, ESPN, it noted how Flip had led the Pistons to 3 straight conference finals appearances. Impressive stuff. He was fired in 2008 after the Pistons lost to the Boston Celtics in the 2008 Eastern Conference Finals when Detroit president of basketball operations, Joe Dumars, said the team needed a new voice. But, I mean, I've been reading the tributes here and there and hearing from different individuals who have talked about Flip Saunders and his legacy as a coach within the realm of basketball. You just heard Tom Izzo's comments there. I heard Jeff Van Gundy of ESPN, he made some comments this morning talking about Flip, and he always talked about how Flip just had an unbelievable basketball mind that kind of, you know, thought outside the box. He was particularly known for his expertise in coaching guards, but arguably, you know, probably his most heralded talent that he honed was not a guard. It was Kevin Garnett. When Kevin Garnett played with the Minnesota Timberwolves, even Garnett at one time was the was an MVP under Saunders' tutelage. So, but just an incredible basketball mind and how he did it the right way. Every time, from my memories of watching Flip on the sidelines, I never saw him like flip out. Flip never flipped, okay? Flip was always a guy who was calm, even keeled, but at the same time, he didn't show a lot of emotion on the sidelines, but you always had this feeling that he had both hands on the steering wheel, that he knew what he was doing. He had a firm grip on wherever that respective franchise was going. So, and I was certainly excited to see what he would do with the Minnesota Timberwolves and, of course, the young talent that they accrued in this past NBA draft. But sadly, that will not happen now. And it just shows you, man, life is funny. Life is funny. You know, Fred Heumann at Channel 6 used to always tell me to hug someone you love because you could be gone. You could be gone tomorrow. You could be gone in an hour. You just never know. Life is crazy. But thoughts go out to the Saunders family as well as the basketball community. Call in, folks, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, what are your thoughts on the news of Flip Saunders passing away?
Yeah, I was devastated to hear about this. Flip Saunders is one of the most iconic coaches of the early 2000s era. And what a great time for basketball that was. So, Flip Saunders, I remember so much about him. I remember his time with the Pistons, most of all, actually. But I also remember him with the Minnesota Timberwolves, him molding KG from skinny, you know, prospect into league MVP and league Hall of Famer eventually. So, Flip Saunders was absolutely incredible for the game. KG actually posted on Facebook. I just checked this out. KG posted on Facebook, "Forever in my heart, ... with a picture of him sitting in Flip Saunders' parking spot looking at his nameplate. That is touching.
Wow.
It makes you want to cry, really. So it's upsetting to see such a great man pass, but he's had such an impact on the lives of so many people, KG included, maybe more so than anybody, but really, hats off to him for a great NBA career and the impact he had upon humanity. So, rest in peace, Flip Saunders.
R.I.P. Flip. And we want you guys to share your thoughts and memories of Flip Saunders, if you have any. Again, call in 517-355-9527. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. If you leave a comment, I'll read it live here on our airwaves, or you can even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or at WKAR_sports, the official Twitter handle of Current Sports. Well, Isaac, first off, man, how was your weekend, dude? It was a busy one. A very busy one for me, dude. How was yours, though, man?
Yeah, it was good, actually. You know, got the weekend off a little more. So I watched college football all day Saturday, which was wonderful. There's nothing better to do on a Saturday. You know that.
Can't complain with that, right?
Exactly. So, and then Sunday, my Saints beat the Colts. So, you know, we've had the discussion so many times about who's had it worse, Saints fans or Lions fans. And I admit that during my era, during my lifetime, it's been much easier on the Saints. As a franchise, I still say Lions. But regardless, boy, the Lions, I pity y'all, man. I really do.
It's bad, man.
Because
I'm not a Lions
the
fan.
Like that.
I want to make that note. I'm not a Lions fan. I mean, I grew up in the D, born and raised in the D. And you kind of have you have to like the team because that's where you're from.
Oh, of course.
But at the same time, for Lions fans, this is how most Lions fans, quote unquote, fans grow up. I mean, when of course I always say when January and February hits, when the playoffs start in the National Football League, again, 90% of the time, and looking at it historically in the Lions franchise, you know that they are not making the playoffs. So when January and February hits, who's that team going to be that you root for? You just sit on your hands and just watch and just enjoy football? I mean, you like having that horse in the race that you can pull for, right? And again, I always said to my dad, I mean, he was such a big Cowboys fan. The Cowboys became my team back when I was growing up, okay? And I just naturally am a Cowboys fan. So, but looking at the Lions this season, I mean, they were so – what makes it so, you know, so much worse because when you look at it, Isaac, they have so much talent on this team. And to see how they started off the year – again, they had a sizable lead over San Diego to start the season, and then they give that up, and then it's just been down here from there. Looking at this team from a talent standpoint, and to look at that record, to compare that to their record, is just no way they should be 1-6. Right now, they should clean house, new GM, new owner. I mean, we've been saying this for years, though. They probably won't do it, right? But we'll get to the Lions in just a sec. But yeah, congrats to your Saints, though, man. They look pretty solid right now. Indianapolis Colts team, you talk about not living up to expectations. That team certainly has not done
that
this year.
How about Andrew Luck being booed by his own fans? The next Peyton Manning booed by the fans of Peyton Manning. It's really incredible. So the Colts are crumbling. I think it's the offensive line, personally. I think that's the main problem with the Colts. Of course, Andrew Luck has had an off year. I really wanted him for fantasy football because I had him last year. What a great pick. And I wasn't able to get him this year, so equally great miss out.
Yeah, Luck needs some luck right now. He is. Poor Andrew Luck. Because I really think he's a premier talent in the league as well. But, all right, well, let's talk college football for a second. Let's talk MSU football more so specifically here. Of course, as I stated in our quick hit headliners, the Michigan State football team is now sixth in the AP poll. How about that? The top four teams in the poll are Ohio State, Baylor. How about Clemson? A 58-0 win over Miami. Al Golden, you got to go, brother. That's exactly what happened. The Miami Hurricanes, they decided to fire Al Golden. I mean, you got to after a loss like that, right? 58-0. You can't just get shellacked like that and expect to keep your job. And this is Miami. Isn't it so crazy, I had to look at where Miami was, like in the 80s?
The U,
dude. I mean, that's one of my favorite, all-time favorite ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries. And to see how dominant they were now, I don't know if that Miami job is even appealing now. I mean, it's so bad right now. Like, there was a time, like, if rewind the clock back to the 80s, where they were this dominant force. If there was a head coaching opportunity for Miami, that was one of the premier jobs in college football. Now, with Al Golden being fired, I'm not sure what coaches are sitting there saying, hey, I like that. I like that opportunity. You know, it's not like a USC. It's not like a Florida State or anything like that. It's like Miami's just Miami now. I don't know. All right. But anyway, Ohio State, Baylor, Clemson looks really, really good. You can make a case that they're playing the best football out of anybody right now in college football. And how about LSU? LSU looking really solid, Isaac, in that top four. I mean, right now they're making me look like a genius right
yes,
now, but
are.
It's still early. It's still early, even though I think LSU is playing some good football. So that's your top four. Michigan State, they pull out and win over Indiana. And I tell you what, looking at the first half compared to the second half in that Michigan State and Indiana matchup on Saturday afternoon, I mean, it was like night and day for me. When I'm sitting there watching that game in the press box, I mean, if it wasn't for, two missed extra points. That it could have been a tie game throughout much of that first half. It was like you saw another gear. I don't know what something changed. That Michigan State defense, they started to become more aggressive. Something happened. Something shifted in that fourth quarter where Michigan State just turned it up a notch. And I got a shout out, Connor Cook, who after this year, if he keeps it up and he keeps rattling performances that are anywhere close to what he did on Saturday, he will go down in many people's eyes as the greatest Michigan State quarterback to ever play. Point blank, period. He was actually 2 yards shy of equaling Bill Burke's Michigan State single game record of 400 yards. Wow. And he did it on some tough throws, folks, trying to fit the ball into tight windows. I mean, he had a multitude of NFL throws against Indiana on Saturday. Unbelievable stuff. And, you know, it's encouraging to see the chemistry that he has built and continues to build with Aaron Burbridge. Another 100-plus yard game for Aaron Burbridge. I think he now equals. I think he's had, like, what, six now? And I think that equals the amount of 100-yard-plus games that Tony Lippett had with Connor Cook last season. Also, how about R.J. Shelton? He also had a big impact in that game. McGarrett Kings Jr. I mean, impressive stuff when looking at the chemistry that Connor Cook has developed with his wide receivers. And it's something that I've said all year. Take the leash off of Connor Cook. I thought that the play calling throughout much of the beginning games this year for Michigan State, I thought it's been way too conservative. At some point, when you have an experience-laden quarterback like Connor Cook, when you have an NFL first-round pick quarterback in Connor Cook, you've got to take the leash off. You've got to let Cook do his thing. And I think that's what we saw. You know, I got to give a lot of credit to MSU's Dave Warner and Jim Bowman because they exploited Indiana's weakness in that second half. Throughout the entire game for the most part, folks. They decided to let Cook be Cook and win the game with his arm. That's what we saw. So I got to give a lot of credit to that Michigan State offense. And I think they were sort of forced to do that in the first place because Indiana, they weren't giving MSU anything on the ground, and vice versa. Michigan State didn't give Indiana anything on the ground either, but Michigan State couldn't run the football. I mean, Madre London and LJ Scott, I mean, you know, Delton Williams, he did have like a, you know, he did have a touchdown, but it was a short yardage gain for the TD. I mean, Indiana really didn't allow Michigan State to do anything on the ground. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, that offensive line that's still trying to get healthy. That's why the bye week, I think, comes at an ideal time for this squad. They can rest up for a week. Coach D'Antonio said after the game that he is not going to allow his team to practice this week. I guess they're gonna still go through, you know, some of their workouts, but they are not practicing in pads, folks. It'll be a relaxed week, time for them to heal up. But when they're forced to throw the ball, Connor Cook was money. Again, folks, 2 yards short. 2 yards short for, you know, again, accomplishing the biggest passing performance that we've ever seen in Michigan State football history. That just shows you what Connor Cook is able to do. So, impressive stuff. What did you see from that game, Isaac?
Yeah, I saw a defense that struggled against the passing game time and time again. I saw a quarterback for Michigan State who's finally thrown it not only like he should, but as much as he should. This is the first time, like you said, where the leash has been off, where Connor Cook's been allowed to really go out there and play like the Spartan dog he is. So Connor Cook was fantastic today, or yesterday, 2 days ago. Wow, quick weekend.
I know, right? Flew by.
Yeah, but anyway, Connor Cook was fantastic, and that rushing game I think will improve as the line continues to heal up. We'll see Jack Allen back soon enough, hopefully for the next game. So once that offensive line gets back to full strength, then the Michigan State running game will improve, and then that offense can really be lethal. It was close through three quarters, but hey, putting a team away in the fourth quarter in that fashion, that emphatically, there's nothing wrong with that. I think this is one of the first really elite wins in Michigan State season, because this is not a bad Indiana team.
Right.
Now, Indiana's been bad historically, but this season, they've got a passing game to write home about. and really rave
about. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, coming into this game, I mean, Indiana's Nate Sudfeld, I mean, he's like the premier quarterback of the conference so far when looking at statistics alone. So Michigan State, their second-half performance against Nate Sudfeld was really the difference in this game. They actually held the Hoosiers to 130 yards of total offense in the third and fourth quarters and just 6 points. I don't know what happened. I don't know what speech was said in that locker room, but it worked, folks. Defensive tackle Joel Heath had a sack and four tackles, helping to keep Indiana to 389 yards, nearly 90 below its average. Grayson Miller, Kari Willis, impressive stuff. They were also joined by Monte Nicholson, Matt Morrissey, and newly reinstated, how about this, Mark Myers, and combining for 16 tackles. I'm really impressed in this next man up mentality that has, of course, forced MSU to adopt because of the injuries that's been on this squad. But guys like Miller, guys like Willis, impressive stuff from those guys. Very impressive stuff, folks. Special teams, I also thought this is probably the best special teams performance that we have seen all year for the Spartans. So they're now number 6 in the AP poll. Again, they have not lost, so they're still in the hunt. They're still vying to try and make a case for that college football playoff. And I think the very first poll for the college football playoff, the very first vote on it, is going to take place this week. Is it today? I have to look that up.
I'll look that up too. Yeah
because Mark D'Antonio, he was even asked about it from Mike Griffith of MLive about, you know, with the latest poll coming out, the very first poll, you know, from those who are on the committee, you know, coming out with the four teams they think will make the college football playoff. I mean, what does a win like this against Indiana do for you guys? So I'm not sure when that's going to come out, but interesting stuff though. This is a good win though for Michigan State heading into a much needed bye week where they can now heal up. Folks, this is our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting high school football with Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal. Of course, the matchups were released via Fox Sports Detroit last night. He'll give us a complete breakdown of the local teams who made it and those who just missed it. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, we had to have a modification when it comes to our Current Sports TV taping schedule for this week alone. Usually, of course, we record Current Sports TV each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on the campus of Michigan State University. But we decided to bump that date up a day and move it to the morning. So tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. is when our Current Sports TV taping will occur due to, you know, trying to adhere to our guest's schedule because he can only make it during that time slot this week. And his name is Nate Miller. He is the new head coach and general manager of Lansing United. I'm looking forward to sitting down with Nate, who resides in Spring Arbor, Michigan. He is currently in his third season as head coach of the Spring Arbor University men's soccer program. So this should be an interesting sit down to talk about Nate's journey to, of course, the head coach and GM of now Lansing United. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, and if you can make it, I know, again, it's the morning, it's 11 a.m., but if you want to come out for that taping, just simply go to WKAR.org, sign up online for free, and then just show up. All right, folks, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Of course, last night on Fox Sports Detroit, they had the selection show where the teams who will be vying for a state championship were revealed and those first-round matchups were put out. And there are just a ton of local teams that will be vying for a possible slate at Ford Field to compete for a state championship. And to talk about it and to break it all down is right now on the lines with us right now, Brian Callaway, high school sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal. Brian, how you doing?
Hey, not bad, Al. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, my man. How'd your weekend go?
Hey, not bad, man. It was a little disappointed I didn't get to hear you do your thing at Midnight Madness on Friday, but yeah, it was a good weekend.
Oh, it was a fun time, and it was such an adrenaline rush. And I tell you what, you know, the energy just naturally is in the building for Midnight Madness. And I tell you what, Brian, though, when Tom Cruise, quote unquote, came out, I almost lost it like a little schoolgirl because I'm a big Tom Cruise fan, but it turns out it was just a lookalike. So I was a little down about that, but it was a great night. Now, Brian, let's talk about some high school football here. First off, for those that are a bit confused about the selection process, can you sort of break down how this process works and which teams, you know, make it and how that all comes about for this time of the year?
Yeah, well, for high school football in the state of Michigan, any team that automatically hit, they get 6 wins in the regular season and plays a 9-game schedule, they're automatically included into the playoff field. And then, you know, if you play 8 games, you can get in with 5 wins. And all those teams are divided up in 8 different divisions. And then there's also an 8-player division where there's 16 teams that make the 8-man player field for the football playoffs as well, too. So the MHSAA just divides all those teams up and, you know, formulates the matchups like that. And you know, this year there were 216 teams that automatically qualified based on win totals. And then, you know, the MHSAA awards playoff points to all high school football teams based on victories that they get. And, you know, that they determine the rest of the field by playoff points with those teams, or maybe 5-4 to get into the playoffs.
Now, when it comes to the regions, Brian, how are the regions, you know, divided up, and how is that figured out? Do you know?
I do not know the exact science that the MHSAA uses. I know that they sit in a room and they kind of, you know, formulate these things, you know, early, you know, that after those games are over in the last week of the regular season, and they're looking at the field and all the teams that are in, and they're trying to divide teams up into the regions that make sense as far as traveling purposes as goals, and, you know, just trying to find things that also make sense as far as the playoff point totals go as well, too. So there are some interesting matchups that, you know, there are some decent distances that people have to travel, like Olivet going all the way to Berrien Springs, for example, for a Division V playoff game, and that's going to be a nice little trip for them. But, I mean, they try to divide it up as fair as possible when trying to do these matchups.
Without a doubt. And, of course, there are certain teams that get to open up at home. I'm looking here at, you know, the Division III matchup, Hazlitt at DeWitt. You got Mason at St. John's. I mean, is that privy to the overall record that, you know, a DeWitt or St. John's has as to why they get to host a game like that?
Yeah, well, it's kind of privy to the record, but also, I mean, playoff points and kind of based on the competition that you face. So, for example, Mason actually was 7-2 this year, and St. John's was 6-3, but St. John's is hosting that game just because they have more playoff points. So, you know, the competition that St. John's faced, you know, maybe had better records than the competition that Mason faced. And, you know, that all factors into the playoff point average.
Right, certainly. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are talking with Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal. So, Brian, when you look at the amount of teams who made it, there are a slew of them. Are there any surprises from the teams that made it locally? And what matches are very intriguing in your eyes?
Well, when you first started about the surprises of teams that made it locally, I mean, you got to start with, I mean, Lakewood with what they did this season. I mean, this was a program that hasn't been in the playoffs since 2002. And, you know, they won 4 games last year. But, I mean, this they won their first 7 games this year, won a share of the Greater Lansing Athletic Conference, and they won the Greater Lansing Athletic Conference Championship as well, too. And so this is a first trip for the playoffs in some time for them. So you look at them, and you look at Langsburg. It's a team that hasn't been in the playoffs in a couple of years, and they're back in the field this year as well, too. So, I mean, I would say that those two teams, and also Corona last year, they won 2 games, and you know, this year they went 8-1 during the regular season. They're also in the playoffs. So, I mean, those are kind of 3 teams that you look at that are, you're kind of weren't really expecting at the beginning of the year to be talking about these teams as playoff teams. And then as far as intriguing matchups go, I mean, one of the things that jumps out to me is, you know, Portland hosting Stockbridge. And Stockbridge has one of the most high-powered offenses here in the state. And, you know, Mason G. Montgomery is their quarterback. And he set the state record for touchdown passes in the season on Friday night. He threw his 49th to cap a 5 touchdown performance on Friday. And that surpassed an old record that was set by Cooper Rush, who threw 48 in 2011. So that matchup with Portland, which is one of the top teams in Division Five, is going to be very intriguing. And then you also look at, you know, Hazlitt DeWitt part 2. I mean, these teams play a very, very tight battle for a couple of weeks ago in the regular season that the Wits pulled away in the second half for. But that's going to be an interesting rematch as well, Mason and St. John's. That's also going to be an interesting rematch.
It's going to be very, very fun. And I'm checking out an article actually before the show started from the Lansing State Journal that you wrote entitled State Football Playoffs Feature 21 Mid-Michigan Teams. And you highlight Lansing Catholic and Portland and how we may see a rematch between the CAAC white rivals. How likely do you think that is to happen, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see how if that does happen, in fact. I mean, I think Stockbridge would have a contrasting style from Portland, so that's going to be an interesting game right there. But also, I think, too, if Portland does get by Stockbridge, I mean, the Stockbridge game will be a good preparation for them as they get ready to face Lansing Catholic, if should Lansing Catholic beat Ovid-Elsie.
There you have it. All right, Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal. Brian, were there any teams that didn't make it that you were shocked about? Any names that come out? Or no, did you think it'll kind of riddle out with these squads that we see now?
Yeah, it kind of sorted out just like I thought it would. I mean, I thought East Lansing possibly could have had an outside chance as one of those 5-4 teams to get into the field, but they just didn't have the playoff points to elevate them as one of those teams. So I thought they were the one team that had a shot. I mean, Holt also was a 5-4 team, but their chances were really slim based on the playoff points that they had. So, I mean, I would say that those two were the only ones that I thought I was anxious to see on Sunday night to see if they might be able to sneak in as a 5-4 team. But, no, obviously, just what they revealed in the selection show on Sunday, I mean, it was pretty much as you expected with, you know, every team in the area that had the necessary 6 wins, you know, getting a spot in the postseason.
Brian, when looking at this slate, which teams do you think have the strongest case and the strongest lineup to make it to Ford Field and possibly hoist up a state championship?
Well, when you look at the Mid-Michigan area, the one team you constantly have to talk about when it comes to football state championships is Ithaca. I mean, this is a team that, you know, had the long record win streak that was snapped in the state championship game last year when they lost to Monroe St. Mary Catholic Central in the Division VI final. But, I mean, they're a team that has a lot back from that team, and it's been a team hungry to get back to the top of the mountain, which is a place that they were so often, you know, and where they've been so often under Coach Terry Hesburgh. So I definitely expect them to kind of make their annual pilgrimage to Ford Field. And then you're looking at this Division VII and smaller schools, and Pullama-Westphalia, I mean, they've had a very strong season so far, and I mean, they're a team that could definitely make some noise here in the state playoffs. And I also think that the person that comes out of that, maybe if Portland or Lansing Catholic are the team to emerge out of their district, I think the winner of that game, if they end up playing, will be able to mount a long playoff run as well, too. And obviously, Lansing Catholic is a team that was just in the state championship game a year ago and just fell short.
Yeah, they certainly did. I remember that one very vividly. All right, Brian, before we get you out of here, my man, what game will you be at this weekend, my friend?
I will probably be at St. Mason at St. John's. Is that set in stone yet? But that's looking like the game I might be at just because I'm covering some other high school stuff going on. And obviously, you know, this is a busy time of the high school year with all the state tournaments in multiple sports. And, you know, we got cross country state regionals this week and, you know, soccer regionals this week. So it's just a busy time in the high school sports land with the stuff other than football.
Yeah, it certainly is. Again, folks, you can follow Brian's work, again, on LSJ.com. Also, follow the man on Twitter, at Brian_Calloway. Brian, thanks so much for your time, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by bringing you weekend winners. We'll also chat about Greg Hardy. And, yeah, we got to do it. The Detroit Lions. All of that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back. You are listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin. Again, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. I believe we had a caller before our second break, Isaac.
Yeah, we did. Sydney from East Lansing. She couldn't stay on line one. But, or I guess line two, but anyway, she did want to commend you, Al, for your fantastic performance at March Madness. You were, of course, the MC of that. So she wanted actually you to expand on that a little bit, maybe just talk about your experience hosting.
Oh, it was a great time. Not at March Madness, but Midnight Madness.
I know. Excuse me.
A lot of people have said that. It's so funny. Like, if I could count the amount of times, you know, I've run into people and they say, oh, yeah, how was March Madness? If I could count the amount of times people would say March Madness, it's pretty funny.
Too
Isaac,
much
so.
Alliteration in sports. That's what right. It is.
But, no, it was a great time, man. I mean, you know, because I got the call early in that morning, and it was such a crazy day because that day, of course, here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building, the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic was going on, which you attended as well, Isaac. And, you know, they had a panel discussion going on. We had Mario Mpemba, voice of the Detroit Tigers, on Fox Sports Detroit. He was a part of the show on Friday. So after, you know, I got the call early in the morning that they wanted me to host. Of course, I'm not turning that down. So I'm like, of course I'll be your host. I did my radio show. After the radio show, I booked over to the Breslin Center and met with Jim Donatelli and Paul Shager of MSU Athletics, and they gave me the entire script. We ran down the script for about 30 minutes or so, looked it over, made sure I got names and pronunciations right. Then I came back, and I had to be back here at 4 o'clock to open up the panel discussion for the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic that was hosted by MSU's own Steve Smith. And Steve is such a great guy. So I did that. That lasted about, you know, maybe like an hour and a half, 2 hours. After that, I was so tired. I went home, and I slept for about an hour. I wanted to get a nap in. So then I slept, woke up, you know, changed, went to the Brez, got there about an hour early, went over the script some more, and the energy that is Midnight Madness at Michigan State, it's so crazy. I mean, they had an autograph session from 8:30 to 9:30. You could feel the buzz in the Brez at the time. It was packed. I go out there, and I, you know, the easy way to get the crowd really going is, of course, to bring up the moment which occurred now over a week ago now with Michigan State topping Michigan in the fashion that it did. So I opened up my whole spiel with that, and that immediately got everybody in the mood for that night. So it was unbelievable, though. I mean, the energy was off the chain. I want to give a special thanks to all of those who have reached out, like Sydney from East Lansing. Thank you so much who have reached out and said good job because, you know, that's big expectations, man. I mean, you're coming out and having to introduce the MSU men's basketball team. They raised the Final Four banner that night. And then Susie Merchant, whose squad is always formidable each and every year. Tom Cruise, I thought, was in the house, as I stated with Brian Callaway. It was so crazy because everybody's always wondering what time is going to come out as. I got the heads up what he was going to do beforehand because, of course, I had to. I'm the MC for the night. When I found out, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool because I'm a big, 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 big spy movie guy. My numero uno, in my top five has to be the James Bond series. I absolutely love James Bond, but also right next to James has to be Mission Impossible. So when I found out they were going to do a Mission Impossible theme, I wanted to tell the world. I almost wanted to go crazy and tell everybody, but I couldn't because they had people watching me the entire day, I'm sure. So when Tom comes out and they had this cool video, which is online, it's everywhere, it's viral now, and they took an excerpt from the latest Mission Impossible movie and placed Tom in it, which is very cool, and he parachutes down near the Magic Johnson statue, and he walks in with his family, and then, you know, he's giving his speech, and all of a sudden he's like, I want to introduce another Tom, and in comes a police motorcycle escort. And behind the motorcycle is like a big black SUV. And out pops the driver, and he goes to the back of the car and opens the door for what I thought and what everybody in the Breslin thought was really Tom Cruise. So I almost go – I almost go nuts looking at this. And I thought it was kind of weird because, you know, the Tom Cruise, he comes out and he waves at the crowd and he – shakes Tom Izzo's hand along with his family, then goes to the MSU men's basketball team, and they're all going nuts as well. And then he doesn't say anything on the mic. He just walks around with his sunglasses on, and he's got the Tom Cruise walk down pat. Trust me, folks. And he just points at the crowd, gives them a thumbs up as they go nuts. You know, he just points at the crowd. He just walks real slow. And then what does he do? He just gets back in the vehicle and then leaves. I'm sitting there like, what? Oh, who does that? I mean, if it was really Tom Cruise, they would have put him on the mic and Tom would have addressed the crowd, okay? So, but I'm still believing it. I'm thinking that, okay, he's a busy guy. That was really Tom Cruise. He just maybe didn't want to say anything on the mic. And he comes back out and he's taking pictures with Susie Merchant, and I'm right in the tunnel there, and I'm sitting there talking to Susie, and I'm like, Susie, that's Tom Cruise. And then Susie says, Al, no, that's not Tom Cruise. That is not Tom Cruise. And I'm like, what? Are you joking? What are you talking? She's like, no, that's a lookalike. Look at him. And that's when I really looked at him. It's like, okay, the jawline was a bit off, and he was way too tall to be Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is like 5'6", 5'7". So that's when it hit me like, okay, that's not Tom. You're right, Susie. They got all of us. They got all of us. But overall, it was a fun night. I had a great time, and the energy was off the chain. So I had a great time, Isaac. Great time.
Yeah, Tom Cruise. To be honest, I've got to say, I think this was a little bit lackluster because Tom Cruise, man, it seems like of all the people you could get, Kiss would be hard to get. I understand.
Well, they did it last year. I don't know if anything would top last year because last year was so cool because they had, you know, Tom, he was dressed up and he rocked out, you know, the guitar. It was crazy, man.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, but yeah. Kiss, I mean, Kiss was fantastic. Even though it wasn't actually Kiss, but Tom Cruise, the problem with Tom is, I don't know, it seems like Tom Cruise would not be that hard to get. The guy travels from sporting event to sporting event for fun.
But it's Tom Cruise.
But it's
Tom Cruise, Isaac.
Tom Cruise, you could have at least made the fake Tom Cruise jump off the second balcony or whatever and landed, parachuted down below and all of that.
Yeah.
At least get a stunt actor if you get fake Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I will say Tom Izzo's entrance was like, eh, you know what I mean? Because he kind of walked in. But it was still cool nonetheless. They put so much time and energy into those videos too, man. The video was pretty hot. The video was pretty hot, I must say. And then Susie Merchant, she came out as Sparty's Angels. Like it was like a Charlie's Angels type of a thing. But it was a fun night. It was a fun night. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's get to, let's go to line one right now. We've got one of our favorite callers on line one, my man Ray. Ray from Indiana. How you doing, Ray? Is Ray there? Do we have Ray? I don't know if Ray's there.
Skipper.
Well, we got you. What's up, Ray?
What did you think of those games Saturday?
They were fun, weren't they?
Hey, I'll tell you, for three quarters, I thought you were going to get beat by Indiana.
How about, I don't know, do we have the bite, Isaac? Do we have the bite of that Georgia Tech and Florida State call? I want to play this for you, Ray. Did you catch this moment? Stay on.
First attempt this year from over 50 yards. He's 3 of 3 tonight, but those were all inside of 40. From the left hash, 56-yarder, just like last week against Pittsburgh. Kick is blocked! Georgia Tech blocks it! Jackets pick it up back in the 25, and Austin is returning it down the left sideline. Past the 50,
blocker.
Past the 30, inside the 20,
and he scores!
Lance Austin picked up the block kick and returned it all the way to the house of the North End Zone. We've had the miracle on North Avenue. This is the miracle on Techwood Drive.
And the students are flooding the field.
I'm trying so hard to contain myself.
Aren't radio calls the best, Al?
Ray, that had to be one of the best calls that I've heard all year. I thought the Michigan and Michigan State call was good. That was pretty. I still think the Michigan and Michigan State call, especially with Strayhorn and Blaha, still tops that one. But that was great. That moment, Georgia Tech beating Florida State. Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Right.
That is my favorite.
Yeah, it was a fun Saturday, Ray. Did you catch that game?
Yeah, I heard about it. I watched the highlights. I wonder if that brought back some memories for the Michigan fans in a week.
Exactly, right. That's the first thing that came to my mind when I saw it because it was one of those last-minute plays that you're not expecting, you know, a special teams play that you're not expecting to be taken to the house in the game to be decided on. And it was unbelievable, though. Unbelievable. Georgia Tech 22, Florida State 16.
Well, you remember Jim Brandt said it, don't you?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, he is such a Michigan guy. It's unbelievable. He said he was speechless. I wonder if they're going to learn to humble themselves down there.
Here we go. I knew it was coming.
I went to the national championship game in Rose Bowl in 97 when they won the national title.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only time the coaches ever listened to what I had to say. I told them to throw some deep passes, and they won the national title. I was happy at the time.
Right.
And they ended up, those rich people, taking all the tickets and saying, we're going to raise your ticket prices. We're not going to give you any more tickets unless you come up with thousands of dollars. That's how ignorant people are.
Oh,
you
boy.
Know, the fans were the greatest I ever seen in 97. And I'm so glad your coaches were listened to some some ideas that somebody could help them beat Michigan like their last Saturday.
Well, let's be real. You know what? And this brings up the conversation on, you know, from a national perspective, when things are said and done. And let's say there's like this three-way tie going on in the Big Ten with, you know, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan. If Michigan beats Ohio State and Michigan State falls to Ohio State, but Michigan State has beaten Michigan this year, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. And also from a national standpoint, how much respect Michigan State gets. Because a lot of people look at that game, to be honest, Ray, and say Michigan State got lucky. It was a fluke. That's how Michigan fans look at it.
The overall record, too, because they'll,
right.
Those teams all have two. Michigan's got two losses, and you guys ain't got none. Neither's Ohio State.
Right. Like I said, if Ohio State, let's say Michigan State ends up losing to Ohio State. Ohio State enters that Michigan game undefeated. Let's say Michigan knocks off Ohio State.
Right.
Then you have Michigan State and Ohio State both with the same record. Who gets that leeway? And at the end of the day, I think a lot of people may go with Ohio State. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. But, you know, Utah getting clobbered this last Saturday don't help Michigan's cause either.
No, not at all. I mean, that was their signature.
To Southern Cal, so
right.
I think that pretty well takes Michigan out of the picture.
Exactly. Yep, no, I agree. I mean, their only notable, you know, loss, to an opponent, other than Michigan State, was of course Utah, and that doesn't look too, you know, looking at Utah. I mean, you look at that game and say, okay, and I think now Utah they fell. I mean, from like what, number 3 to like 13, I think.
13. Right.
Yeah, to 13.
Well,
now,
they had
so.
A close call a couple of games before this where they almost blew it.
Yeah.
You know, so they've been a little on shaky grounds the last few weeks. But it'll be interesting. You know, Michigan better not take Minnesota lately or Penn State or Indiana. They got 3 road games coming up. And those teams could come up and bite them, too, if they do what I tell them, stop the run and force that quarterback to throw the ball.
Yeah, it's going
to
be – again, they play Minnesota this weekend, then they play at home against Rutgers. Then, as you just stated, Ray, Indiana and Penn State on the road. Ray, thanks a lot for your call,
all right, buddy.
Dude.
God bless.
Thank you. All right, well, a minute left. Isaac, you got a weekend winner for us?
Yeah, my weekend winner would be probably NBA fans. One day remaining until the start of the season. You know I'm buzzing. I've already got my League Pass subscription signed up and ready to
really?
Go.
Really? I need that password, brother. No, I'm joking.
But, no, I love League Pass. I can't wait for the season to start. So how about that? Go NBA.
Yeah, I don't have a weekend winner. I have a weekend loser. Greg Hardy, defensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going to get to him tomorrow because we only got, 30 seconds left. But if you did not see what occurred during that Cowboys and Giants game on the sidelines with Greg Hardy, I was absolutely disgusted. And I was even more disgusted with the way he handled himself in the post-game press conference in the locker room. I'm going to save that rant. I'm going to contain my anger for tomorrow's show. You don't want to miss it, folks. But thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR. AM 870 East Lansing. Thanks so much for Brian Calloway for calling in and giving us a great breakdown. Take care and be easy, people.